My name is Dr. Ian Storch. I'm a board-certified gastroenterologist and osteopathic physician, and you are listening to DO or Do Not. If you're interested in joining our team or have suggestions or comments, please contact us at doordonotpodcast.com. Share our link with your friends and like us on Apple Podcasts, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We hope you enjoy this episode.
On this episode of the DO or Do Not podcast, we have Dr. John Granito, Dean of the College of Osteopathic Medicine at California Health Sciences University, or CHSU. Dr. Granito also serves as the Chief Academic Officer, Vice President of Health Affairs, and Professor at CHSU-COM. Previously, he served as Associate Dean and Professor of Pediatrics and Emergency Medicine at the Kansas City University College of Osteopathic Medicine. Dr. Granito received his osteopathic medical education at Ohio University and his Master of Education in Health at the University of Cincinnati. Dr. Granito specializes in both emergency medicine and pediatrics. In this episode, we dive deep into Dr. Granito's medical journey and the factors that brought him to ultimately pursue a career in academic medicine. He also highlights the challenges of emergency medicine and pediatrics, and the unique perspectives he has obtained because of his osteopathic background and training. Finally, he reveals his unique superpower, which he believes makes him successful as a physician. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the DO or Do Not podcast. Today we're here with Dr. Granito, who's the Dean of California Health Sciences University College of Osteopathic Medicine. Thank you for joining us today.
Good morning. Thank you.
So we'll start off. For our pre-medical students that are listening into our podcast, can you tell us about CHSU-COM? And can you talk about the campus and the location?
So we're the third osteopathic school in California. We started in 2019 with our pre-accreditation status from the COCA. It allowed us to enroll our first class of students back then. We're now starting interviewing for the class of 2026. Clovis is a suburb of Fresno, California. Fresno is the fifth largest city of California. It's the 35th largest city in the United States. And the reason I mention that is of the top 50 cities by population size, Fresno is 35th, but all other 49 of those cities had a full four-year medical school, and Fresno did not. If you look at California, it's one of the most affluent states in the United States, and yet we have some of the poorest health outcomes in the Central Valley of California. And so part of that is obviously lack of access to care. So putting a medical school in the 35th largest city of the U.S. where there's pockets of underserved lack of access seemed logical. And that's why we're there. Fresno is a very agriculturally based community. It's Fresno County is the number one food producer of the United States. I didn't know that until I moved there. Most of our grapes, almonds, pistachios, garlic, artichokes all come from Fresno County. And that's an important part of the community. Fresno is a 55% Hispanic community, so a lot of migrant farm workers and a lot of farm workers' rights discussion center in Fresno County.
From a general and academic perspective, what do you think makes CHSU special, and why should a student consider it over other schools?
We set out, since I worked at other osteopathic schools with great reputations, our challenge was we didn't have a reputation. So what would draw a student to come to a place that they've never heard of before? And we picked five unique aspects of our curriculum and curriculum delivery that would set us aside from maybe other schools. Number one, being in a predominantly Hispanic community, we looked at making Spanish language and medical Spanish class a requirement for every student rather than elective. So we've incorporated medical Spanish throughout the whole first and second year of the curriculum, and it aligns with the body system that's being taught for those 4 to 6 weeks. That ends in a capstone OSCE, where students interact with standardized patients only in Spanish, and it's been very well received. It's probably one of the easiest classes we have, but very important for the cultural competency of the students in our region. Second, we looked at all the students who will want a research line item on their CV, and that's very important to all of us. But yet we looked at the impact of the kinds of research we want to do there, and we put students in a longitudinal clinic a half day a month at a federally qualified health center or community health clinic, And their goal is to do a population health research project that has a very important impact for that community health clinic. In other words, what's the impact of this resource-limited healthcare delivery location on the population it serves? And those are very impactful, small research hypotheses that need to be questioned and answered, and our students get to do one of those. We have a high impact use of technology, so we not only do anatomy through augmented reality and holographic imaging, but we also provide every student with a handheld ultrasound probe that fits into their smartphone, and we start teaching ultrasound in week 5 of the curriculum, where they ultrasound each other's knees and go from there. So we think ultrasound and technology use is going to be far surpass what we're already doing, but it was very important to embrace that. Because of the nutrition-based economy that we are centered in, we built a demonstration teaching kitchen, and we hired 2 PhD-level dietitians to teach nutrition as a separate standalone module in each of the science courses. So in other words, our 4-week short course on renal system, we do a low-sodium diet. And so what we do is take a look at how to alter menus and how to shop for people that need a low-sodium diet. If you're a family of 4 or 6 people and you're grocery shopping and grandpa can't have sodium in his food, how do you shop for the rest of the family? How do you make your menus taste good? And what's the biochemical impact of not or yes or no having sodium in them? So we add those nutrition modules. In the GI course, we look at gluten-free. In the endocrine course, we look at how do you shop and cook for when one person's diabetic and the rest of your family are not. And then the students get to cook and share their food afterwards. And so it's also a great bonding experience for the class. And then 5th, we've embraced active learning completely. We have no lectures. There's no lecture hall at our school. We do all team-based learning, active engagement, discussions in the first and second year, except for obviously the labs in the afternoon. So those are the 5 things that we think separate us collectively. Those 5 things separate us from other schools.
What are the CHSU affiliate in terms of clinical experience, and what types of hospitals do the students rotate through?
We looked at our geography when I got there because I had the same question myself before I moved there. There's actually 9 separate hospital systems in driving distance of our school, not just hospitals, but complete hospital systems. And so we have physicians from each and every one of those to greater or lesser degree interested in doing clinical rotations. And as we start our rotations in a few months, we have a VA hospital, for instance, where we're going to do surgery. We have a children's hospital where they developed a whole separate service team for our students. The Adventist Health System is located nearby with several hospitals. Kaiser Permanente is there. We're going to do inpatient internal medicine rounding at Kaiser. And we have our community health system that has 4 hospital systems as well. A little bit outside of our area is Dignity Mercy Hospital for family medicine and 2 other hospitals that we're still in conversations with. So we have plenty of multiple different opportunities for rotations.
So what are your primary roles and responsibilities as the dean? And in your position, what are your main interactions with the students?
The dean is the chief academic and administrative officer for any medical school, DO or MD. My job varies from day to day based on meeting with the other leadership team, setting policies, reviewing requests from students, interacting with student government. I try to be a hands-on dean. I try to be in one of the classrooms every day for a few minutes, interacting with students in the sense of getting feedback, observing the faculty. I try to go either to the classrooms or to the labs. I like the physical diagnosis lab, so I lead some of them. But the dean's responsibility is not just for the students and not just for policies, but also for the faculty. So hiring faculty, making sure the hierarchy is preserved in the various departments of the faculty, and the staff as well. So as a startup school, my responsibilities were hiring everyone. So we have 102 faculty and staff right now. So that took a lot of interviews and a lot of time commitment.
What factors played a role in your decision to become involved in academic medicine? And do you still see patients in a clinical environment?
No, I don't. I stopped seeing patients in a clinical environment a few years back. And then moving to Fresno, it didn't make sense to start up again. So that's the second part of that. Being involved in academic medicine was actually a I stumbled into that. I worked at the Chicago College of Osteopathic Medicine for many years, began dabbling in teaching on campus as my clinical time allowed me to do. I met some great role models in mostly scientists who are truly academics, and slowly began to embrace more academic time commitment rather than clinical, coming to some conferences like the one we're at today. Seeing best practices from other schools really helped shape me towards an academic career. Progressive responsibilities as course director, department chair, associate dean is what led me to where I'm at today.
We want to switch gears just a little bit now. Can you tell us where you went to college and when you decided to become a physician?
I grew up in Ohio, went to the University of Cincinnati for undergrad. I wanted to be a doctor, and I didn't know there was anything other than MDs. I applied to the six MD schools in Ohio. I only got one interview, didn't get accepted, and was feeling pretty dejected about that. My father and uncle and brother are chiropractors. And my dad said, you should apply to the new DO school that just opened up in Ohio. And I literally said, what the heck is that? I had no idea what that was. And so I went and interviewed at Ohio. And as soon as I stepped on the campus, I realized these are my people. This is where I belong. So went to college at University of Cincinnati and medical school at Ohio University.
Yeah. How was your experience there in medical school, or at an osteopathic medical school?
You know, medical school is challenging for everybody, no matter where you go to school, and you think that your school is not doing it the correct way until you meet students from other schools, and then you realize we all share the same challenges and frustrations in years one and two. I really blossomed in years three and four. It was quite eye-opening, as many students experience when they shift from the first 2 years to the second 2 years. And so I really appreciated it. OU gave us a great foundation in years one and two. And I think, like many of my classmates and other students at other schools, you don't fully appreciate what you had in year one and two until you're looking back at it many years later. So I appreciate the training I got there.
After having your clinical experiences in years three and four, what main factors played a role in you deciding on a specialty, and how did you ultimately choose that specialty?
So I have a unique experience having done two separate residencies. I thought growing up I wanted to be a doctor, and in my head being a doctor meant being a pediatrician. I had experienced some great didactic lectures by pediatricians at Ohio, and as role models, I wanted to be like them. And so I decided to do a pediatric residency, thinking I was going to be a neonatologist. Along the way, I saw pediatric emergency medicine as an exciting opportunity, and I see classmates of mine in their ER residency having a much more adrenaline-pumping experience. And so instead of doing a fellowship after my pediatric residency, I decided to do a second residency in emergency medicine, mostly because of some role models, again, that I met along the way in Chicago. And so I did a second residency in emergency medicine and practiced most of my career either in a pediatric emergency or general emergency medicine.
Given that you did both of those residency programs, how was your experience specifically being an osteopathic physician and doing those?
I think in residency training, predominantly osteopathic program, you have a whole different flavor of how you approach patients and truly incorporating the whole body experience, the whole family experience in pediatrics. And pediatrics is really a family-centered in the first place, so you really have to incorporate lots of holism into being a pediatric resident. In emergency medicine, what's interesting is people in residency training think there's no room for OMM in the emergency department, and the reality is that's not necessarily true, and I've attended several conferences with ER doctors showing how you can do some quick and simple maneuvers that you've learned at the bedside and on an ER cart and while you're waiting for lab results, etc. Headaches, ankle sprains, torticollis come to mind as chief complaints where OMM can be very helpful in the ER if you choose to embrace that.
How has being an osteopathically trained physician impacted your personal philosophy practicing?
I have an anecdotal answer to that, not a data-driven answer to that. And I practiced emergency medicine for the last 12 years at a hospital in Chicago that had a mixed staff of DOs and MDs. And I think what the nurses will say and what I wish we would have documented with some research is the DOs tend to touch our patients sooner during an interaction. It's sooner as you meet a stranger, and it's more reassuring, whether it's a hand on grandma's shoulder, let her know everything's going to be okay, to just doing more of an actual physical exam. And I know that's an anecdotal answer to your question, but I think that is the distinction I saw and probably applies to me more than anything else. The challenges of emergency medicine, although people may think of it as a transactional experience where a patient comes with X, gets a prescription and leaves, or a treatment and then leaves, is very transactional, and yet there's so much more social challenges in the emergency department. How is that patient going to follow up? Where are they going to get their medication? Are they going to be able to get their medication? And I don't think osteopathic medicine has a ownership of those features. There's plenty of MDs who do lots of that stuff. There's plenty of DOs who don't do that, embrace that holistic approach. But I think that's what I incorporated into the way I practiced emergency medicine.
What is one attribute about yourself or your superpower that you feel helped you become successful as a physician?
I think of myself as extremely organized and intentional about the way I approach projects and the way I approach delegation of responsibilities. But I think what really I'm most proud of in my career is integrity. If I say I'm going to do something, I'll do it. If I say I can't do something, I won't do it. I try to live my life based on integrity of my word. And so my organizational skills is my superpower, but my integrity is what I think has led me to be most successful.
So can you share one piece of advice that you were given by a mentor that you felt has been most impactful and that you would pass on to other students?
I think we all come into medicine saying we want to help people. There's no question about that. Every single student says that. But when you realize at some point during your studies, it's not about you. I have to make this checklist. I have to do this OSCE. I have to do this COMLEX. I have to do this thing. And once you make that shift into, my real purpose is to actually do something that will improve this person's life. Once you make that shift to that philosophical reason for why you're being, really helps you focus on then what it is you're doing in medicine and why you're really here, rather than just jumping through some hoops to prove to your dean that you're, can do, pass a test or meet some metric on a rubric. So I think that's the most useful advice I would say is that as soon as you can, begin to shift your thinking about what am I really doing here in the world that's not about me, it's really about the patient.
Thank you so much. I think current students and all aspiring physicians will find that message very helpful. So thank you so much, Dr. Granillo, for talking with us today. We appreciate your time and your insight on your experience as a DO physician.
Thank you.
This concludes our episode of Do or Do Not. Send all inquiries, comments, suggestions, and even let us know if there is someone you want us to interview to doorodonotpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at Do or Do Not Podcast for updates. If you enjoyed our podcast, please share it with your classmates and administration. We have plenty of more interviews lined up, and we're excited to share them with you. This is Tian Yu Shea. Thank you guys so much for listening to Do or Do Not.